Hi, bye. Welcome. Welcome to Anonymity, our spiritual foundation. My name is Stella and I'm an alcoholic. I love that.
Welcome.
Feels like home. My sobriety date is December 25th, 1978. My home group is called Astra, Open Step and Tradition in Williamstown, New Jersey, southern New Jersey, about 45 minutes from Atlantic City. If you're ever in the area, please come visit us. We'd love to have you. Really would. Just letting God. May I remind all people, please do put your cell phones or pagers on vibrate so it doesn't disturb speakers. We have a special needs right there, and for someone who's doing that, it's fine, wonderful. May I ask for a moment in silence, please, for the gratitude of AA recovering for 70 years. Thank you. I'd like to welcome you all. I'm glad you're all here. And I think we're in for some real treat. We have three wonderful speakers. I've been chatting with them before the meeting. And the first speaker will be Jim S. from Alabama, from area number one. Jim.
Hey everybody, I'm Jim and I am an alcoholic. And as Stella said, I'm from Alabama, area one. We're number one. So anybody ask me who I am, I tell them. I say I come from a small town in Alabama, a little town called Midland City, Alabama. And I left there, I think the population dropped down to 872. And I go back home, we go back up to 873. Like I say, I come from a small town in Alabama, and my sobriety date is 8 June of 96. That's not very long, but seems like a long time to me. I feel like a baby sitting up here with these people here. I was talking with Stella before the meeting started, and I was telling her, for 3 months I've been at the house with a little notebook, put down everything I'm going to say up here today. And it's at the house. And I'm here. So that note don't say too much from my memory. But, I thought to myself, sat outside there, and I said, well, Jim, you got two options. You can run and hide, or you can do this thing the best of your ability. So I said, I'm going to do this thing the best of my ability. So I went over to the literature rack, and I got me a thing on anonymity. I tell you a little bit about myself first. Like I say, I'm retired military. And anonymity was a hard thing for me when I came in the program because it took a long time for me to sober up. And when I sobered up, I thought everybody else had to, too, because I didn't want to be by myself. I didn't want to be in here and everybody else out there drinking yet. So I didn't practice anonymity too good in my first years of this program, first year or so. I would go to bars and try to drag people out and take them to meetings, and they didn't want to go. You know, I've got many threats and bad resentments toward me. Still, a lot of people have resentment toward me for that. And someone told me if I come around again, they're going to kick stew out of me. So I don't go back around it anymore. But I had to give that up. It was got to where it wasn't my best thing to do. But the anonymity, I try to practice anonymity. Yeah, I hear it so many different ways. Some people have different versions of it. I use my full name when people ask me my name. Some people, I sign things with my full name. Because somebody comes to town and say, do you know Jim S? No. Do you know Jim Stansberry? Yeah, I know him. Okay, I didn't know where he's at. So, I don't take my anonymity. I take it seriously, but I don't, because some suffering alcoholic out there might, just might know me by Jim S, and that's all he knows me by. Or he might know me just by my last name only. But I was known as different names around the house there. But I like to practice anonymity. I respect the devil out of other people's anonymity. Mine, I can handle how I got to. But yours, I can't handle it. I got to respect yours. So I can't go out and say, yeah, I know Joe Willola, he goes to meetings with me and he's a drunk. I can't do that. Before I go farther, I see a member of my home group is here with me today. My sponsor's not here. Thank goodness. Oh, you go, you should give a report. Okay. I know there had to be one in the crowd somewhere. But I just want to go over this thing here. It said, because these are some of the things that I had trouble with when I commanded. First one here, this is what Pam said. After I tell my loved ones about AA membership, should I ask them not to disclose information to anybody else about me? I didn't have to worry about that because I'm not married. I wasn't married at the time. And I didn't have no problem with that. And my family, I'm pretty much alone by myself there in Alabama. My sons are all gone, so I didn't have to worry about that too much. But, you know, if people was to ask, some of my kin folks, is Jim an alcoholic? I don't mind them saying yes, because everybody knew I was. So there wasn't no secret. I don't hold no secrets about my alcoholism. But that, like I said before, that's for me to say I'm an alcoholic. I can't say you're one. And another one here says, what should I do if I meet old acquaintances at AA meetings? I meet a lot of old acquaintance meetings because, like I say, we're a small community, and a lot of people coming in that I drank with before. Me and them were old bar buddies for a long time. And a lot of them I met when I come in here. They've been in before I did. So I had a tendency to go out then, and I'd go out somewhere and say, hey, do you know Joe Blow so-and-so is an alcoholic? I seen him in a meeting the other day. And then some of the people that got mad with me, which I don't blame them at all. I don't go around telling people about who I see at meetings. That's their business. What I do if I see a public figure at meetings. At home, being as small as it is, you'd be surprised at the lawyers and the doctors and the priests that come to meetings just around there for being as small as what it is. And the first thing I wanted to do was say, my God, I didn't know them people even drank. And I wanted to go out and tell somebody about it. But I had to, you know, that's something I had to hold back on. Because my ego, when I wanted to be known, you know, as a man that bumped elbows with a judge in the damn meeting. And I couldn't do that. That made me feel bad for a while, but that's all right. I got over that. It said, I know I should not reveal the names of members that I learned in AA meetings, but what about their personal information? I don't even go to there. The personal information, I don't even touch that. I'll leave that alone. And should I tell people who seem to have a drinking problem about my AA affiliation? Yes, I tell people about my AA affiliation. Somebody comes and asks me a question about it, I don't hesitate to tell them. I go to AA, and I'm there to help you if you need some help. I want the hands of AA always to be there, and for that I'm responsible. I go to jails to speak at jails and hold meetings at jails, and I see some of these people that's in jail when they get out. And we tell them about anonymity when we're in there talking to them in the jails. But some of them have a tendency to go out, you know, and they'll see you on the street and they say, hey, didn't I see you today? Wasn't you the guy who had the AA meeting to jail? And I said, yeah, I'm sure him. I'm him. And but I don't mind that. That's okay. I'm spreading the message. Maybe he'll tell another suffering alcoholic out there that needs help. And we're to get around it, that I'm there available for help. And then at the immediate level, I see a lot of that going around. There's a couple of times that I've seen people in the home, a small town there, and their picture appeared on the paper, and they were AA, and they were talking about AA. And I didn't like that. Not that I wanted to do it, but I didn't think that was the way it should be done. And I still don't think that's the way it should be done. I wouldn't have my picture appear in the paper and saying I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'll, you know, I'll write anything in there about it that anybody might want to hear about AA, but I will not put my name on it. I will sign it anonymous. I go to Fort Rucker to, there's a military post outside of the town there, and I have go to meetings out there for the, what they call the drug and abuse NCOs, and I go talk to them, but I don't let it be known to the media or anybody, the news or anything that I'm doing this, because they might want to put it in their local newspaper. And the military has a way of spreading things around like that and taking pictures of it so they can up their standards a little bit better. Should I reveal my identity to my boss, who I can attend early AA meetings regularly? We have people that do come to meetings, and they have an understanding with their boss. I've went to a couple of guys that are having trouble with their employer, and they wouldn't let them off some time to go to a meeting. And they thought they were going off and going to the bar getting drunk is what they thought they were doing. So I went with a couple of these guys and explained to them what was going on with the they had to go to the meetings. They didn't have to go, but that's what they were doing to try to help him better. I'm retired out of the military, so I didn't have no boss I had to explain to. Because when I was in the military, drinking was acceptable. You know, in fact, it was expected or you get good and drunk most of the time. If you didn't get drunk and go to jail and get in a good fight, you wasn't a good soldier. So we had to do that. I didn't have to, but sort of come natural to me. I didn't have no trouble with it. I didn't have a bit of trouble with that. None of the past. But we sort of have a tight-knit group at home there, as my friend could tell you. And we practice anonymity. I think we do pretty good. Because, like I say, it's a small community and everybody knows everybody else. So really, you're not hiding from anyone. The only thing you're doing is making, you know, if you go back out, everybody's going to talk about you if you go back out and drink. And they'll talk about you when you keep going to meetings. So I'd rather have them talking about me when I'm going to meetings than I would when I'm going out and drinking. And people come up and say, when do you think you'll quit going to them meetings? Right? I ain't going to quit going to them meetings. And I ask them, how do you know I go to meetings? They say, well, we've seen you going in the door one day. Okay, that's fine. But like I say, the anonymity, my sponsor said the same thing. I know what's in here. That's why I wrote it down in that notebook, because I have a hard time coming out of my head. But I do practice the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. I practice place principles for personalities. And I didn't even know what the hell personality principles were when I came in here. But I had no personality whatsoever and very little principles about myself. But AA has taught me a lot about anonymity. When I came in here, I didn't know nothing about it. I was completely... like everything else, I was absent-minded about the whole thing. And a lot of this stuff is still new to me, just like this guy here. There's two things I dread and I fear. That's talking in front of crowds and being asked to. Stella's asking about that paper there, and did he get it? And I said, yeah, I got it. But I could have swore I put down there no when I returned it. You know. I got a letter back thanking me for accepting it. Something happened here. I don't know what happened. But sort of tails got turned on me a little bit. But I'm about run out of things to say, but I hope I didn't bore y'all. I'm trying to give you the best thing I can. And I hope to do better next time. God bless all of you.
Not bad for off the cuff, to tell you. Our second speaker is Mary S. from Ohio, Area 53.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mary, and I'm an alcoholic. It is such... I am so grateful to be here this afternoon. I am grateful... I think you brought Kleenex, didn't you? I had to use my handkerchief to wipe up the water there on the table. I'm really grateful for friends who are here in this room. Some are here kind of by accident, and some are here because they came to support me, and I love you all. I also love you all, even though I don't know you, because God in my world, except for once, God has always been anonymous. But God is here, and God speaks to me through you, and I'm grateful for you. So thank you all for giving me this opportunity to speak and to live sober and to live happy, because I wasn't sober and I wasn't happy when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in the first place. My sobriety date is May 7th, 1994. I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and I have a brand new home group. It is the Lodestar Group, and it meets on Wednesday evenings at 7 o'clock, and our anniversary, I don't remember which anniversary it is, but our anniversary is the 13th of July, and if you are in Columbus, Ohio on the 13th of July, come and join our anniversary, and if you're around at noon, come to the Growth Within group, which could use your experience, strength, and hope. There are many women there who are in treatment and who need to know that this program works, and they get tired of hearing it from me, and so I'd love to have somebody else come, and there are people here who do come to that meeting, and I'm very grateful. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no idea what anonymous meant, except that it meant that you must have a problem, like Alcoholics Anonymous and Gamblers Anonymous and Overeaters Anonymous, and I knew that it meant you had a problem, but I had never thought very much about it before then. I grew up the first child of four, with parents who loved me very much and were very good people, but were delusional. And the reason I know they were delusional is that they thought that I was the smartest kid who ever hit this earth. I think it's the first child syndrome, you know. The first kid starts talking, you go, oh, my God, no child would ever start talking this. And so they actually consulted an eminent child psychiatrist about what to do about this precious gift they had with this brilliant child. And he said, which was very good advice, he said, let her do whatever she wants to do. She can do whatever she wants to do, which is good advice, you know. But I told you my parents were delusional. And so what they did was they told me that I could do whatever I wanted to do. Consequently, by the time I graduated from high school, I had an overabundance of self-esteem. And everybody thought I was going to be famous. Nobody knew what I was going to do, but I was going to be famous. And anonymity was about the worst thing that I could imagine applying to me, because after all, I was Mary. And I was supposed to be. And so but what happened immediately after I graduated from high school was that I discovered alcohol. And I will tell you that I did become famous within 1 year of starting to drink alcohol for being the only girl to flunk out of my university twice in 1 year, and that was the start of my adventures with alcohol. Now, after I flunked out of college twice, I came back home and did the obligatory staying out of school for 3 quarters until you can go back, and I met a man who didn't drink very much, and so I didn't drink very much, and so life got better. Now, it never occurred to me that life got better, partly because I wasn't drinking very much, but it did. And things went along, but since I had already really crossed the line into alcoholism, which I know because I started having blackouts that first year and terrible consequences like flunking out of school twice and stuff like that, I know that I was an alcoholic already. And, of course, alcoholism untreated is going to continue to come back, and it did. And by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was famous all over again. Not like in front page of the Columbus Dispatch famous, but the school authorities knew me. And if you asked the school authorities whether I was the good mom I wanted to be, they would have said absolutely not. And if the court authorities had asked me if I was the good mom that I wanted to be, they would say, absolutely not. I was famous for not being able to manage my children. And if you'd asked my neighbors whether I was a good neighbor, they would have said, absolutely not, because mine was that infamous house down the street. And if you had asked my employers whether I was a good employee, they would have said, well, we like her, but... And I wasn't a good employee, and I had a bad reputation all over the place. And so when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous entirely by accident, I welcomed anonymity. I was tired of being known as the woman who. And anonymity became something that I understood on a different level. Instead of being something I feared, it was something that I treasured. And I did understand just that level of anonymity, that level of anonymity that allows a newcomer to come to Alcoholics Anonymous in safety. It was somehow the antidote to shame. And I was grateful for anonymity when I got here. Now, I didn't really belong here, but I knew that there was a solution here for my problems, even though I had, I knew I had a problem with drinking, but it really wasn't the cause of all my problems. And I know that that's true today. See, I have alcoholism, and alcoholism flourishes even without alcohol if I'm not working a program. And I didn't at that time have a program. And I was, until I got here, I was still drinking. So, you know, I did need to be here, but I didn't think I really needed. I mean, I did, but I didn't need because of the alcohol. So anyway, I came here, and I did everything that you told real alcoholics to do, because I really needed this program, because my life was horrible, and I wanted my life to be better. And I knew that if I came here and I did what you did, I would get what you had, and you were laughing and having a good time and not afraid to answer your phone, apparently. And so I wanted what you had, so I did what you told me to do. I worked the steps, I got a sponsor, and I'm going to try to say this without crying. I've had two sponsors in the 11 years I have been sober, and both of them are in this room today. And one of them lives in Columbus, but one of them went to California. And then New Hampshire, and is now in New York, and abandoned me. And but I did get that sponsor, and I am so grateful for that sponsor. And I started to learn something else about anonymity, because she saw something in me, some character defects in me that I didn't know I had. And she started telling me things to do that were going to help me get rid of those character defects, even before I knew that I had them. And one was that one day I called her up and I said, Tracy, I said the stupidest thing in this meeting. I said the dumbest thing, and I was so afraid somebody's going to hear it and do what I said. And she said, kindly, I might say, she said, Mary, you're just not that important. And I realized, that was the beginning of my realization that it's really not that important who I am. The second thing that she did was, because she recognized extreme self-centeredness, was she gave me an assignment. And the assignment was to do three nice things for somebody every day that nobody could know about. And if anybody found out that I did them, they didn't count. And if I told somebody, they didn't count. And what she did was start to plant the idea of service anonymously. Now, I come from a religious tradition where anonymous service is the highest form of service. And so I could connect with that, and I could get that. And that's what I'm looking to do today. It was real hard when I got up here now not to say, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm not going to tell you who I am. Because what I am looking for today is an opportunity to do anonymous service. But I wasn't there yet. What happened after 2.5 years of sobriety was I was in a meeting one afternoon when I came to the dreadful realization that I had worked the second step wrong. And I had worked all 12 steps and was continuing to work some of them on a daily basis, 3, 6, and 7, and 10, 11. and 12 for sure, but I had worked the second step wrong. And this was the discovery of my main character defect, which you probably already guessed, knowing that I had this overabundance of self-esteem when I was 17 years old. I realized that I had worked the second step wrong. Second step does not say, came to believe that God will remove, God has the power, I'm gone totally blank. Came to believe that the power greater than ourselves could restore sanity. It does not say that God could restore sanity. It says a power greater than ourselves. I had believed in God all the time. God came to me before I got sober and was in my bedroom telling me that something big was going to happen to me. Now, I don't want you to think that I'm some spiritual giant. I want you to know that when God was in my bedroom telling me 2 months before I got sober that something huge was going to happen in my life, it took me 3 years to figure out that he was talking about getting me sober. But what I realized was I knew there was a God, but I gave God no credit for being any more powerful than me. I am so grateful that that step says a power greater than ourselves, because that means that God is bigger than me. And that's when I realized that my number one character defect is arrogance. And I had no idea until that moment that that was my number one character defect. So immediately I started working steps 6 and 7 on that character defect. And I worked on it very religiously. Non-religious. We're not religious. I worked on it very spiritually. I worked on it very regularly. I was willing to have God remove that defect of character of arrogance. Now, obviously, it's not all gone. But what I did... Some changes started happening. First of all, I started hearing myself say things I had never heard before. I started hearing myself say, I don't know. I started hearing myself say, I was wrong. I started hearing myself say, you know, I thought it was this way, but I realize now that you've mentioned this, that it's this way. And on a really good day, I didn't say anything at all. Now, everything has been getting better. And I got to tell you, I have a life today beyond my wildest dreams. I really do. I have the best job in the world for me. The best job. I work in a great place, and I have the best job in the whole place. And my employer thinks I'm doing a good job, and my neighbors think I'm doing a good job, and my kids think I'm doing a good job. And that's nice. And it's nice that I don't have to keep saying to myself, I'm doing a good job. But I got to tell you what happened a few months ago. Everything is going along great. Life is good. I'm happy. I'm doing lots of service work. I should talk a little bit about anonymity in terms of the tradition. I got to tell you that when I came in here by accident, I came in here on the coattails of a man who was very active in service. And so what happened, and he stuck around. I didn't let him know exactly who I was for a real long time, but he did stick around, and I stuck with him. And what that meant was that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous as a brand new person, I was doing a lot of service. I was going to service functions, and I was hearing about the traditions, and we were hanging around with people who were living the traditions. And so when they talked about anonymity, I knew what they were talking about in terms of the traditions. So I've known forever about not having your anonymity broken in the public, and I've known forever about not breaking other people's anonymity, which means I can't go home and tell anybody about how last night's evening got closed out, which really is a pain. But I got that part. But the spiritual foundation part, I guess I didn't get. About 7 or 8 months ago, things are going along great, and I am suddenly hit with, I don't know, like a typhoon of misery. It was this weird combination of gratitude, because I still had everything in the world that my higher power has given to me, and misery. And I couldn't figure out why. And I still don't know exactly why, except that the wonderful sponsor that I have now said that when that happens to her, that means her higher power is getting her ready for something big. And I don't know what that something is yet, but I was willing to go through it. But it was really painful. Now, in the middle of this 7 or 8 month period, I got to tell you, here's what happened. Is that here's what the agony was about. Well, the agony was about was realizing how much of that arrogance I still had left. Even though God was taking it away little by little by little, every time I opened my mouth, what I heard was stupid and was know-it-all. And I think part of it was I hit the 10-year blues where I felt like I had to say something because there were all those people out there who were brand new and they just had to hear what I had to say. Well, because it's my responsibility to give it away. If I don't give it away, I can't keep it. And it was awful, because every time I said something, it was stupid, and it was wrong-headed, and it was leading people in the wrong direction, and it was awful. And my sponsor said to me, you know, you can take a break. And thank you, I have. And it has been wonderful. But see, well, here's what happened. I'm struggling over and over and over on a daily, almost minute-by-minute basis with this arrogance and this know-it-all and this big shot, and I'm somebody special and all that other stuff. And I get this letter in the mail, and it is a loving invitation to speak on anonymity, our spiritual foundation. Thank you, God. Thank you, GSO. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Because now it's made me think about anonymity, and it's made me realize how very anonymous I want to be. Who I am is not important. What I do is. And I don't know why I didn't read this till this morning, but here in the 12th tradition, here's what it says, and this is what I was thinking about talking about today. It says, I won't tell you what page it's on. Find it. These experiences taught us that anonymity is real humility at work. Humility which I want so badly. I don't have it because part of me still wants to be known far and wide for my humility. But, okay. These experiences taught us that anonymity is real humility at work. It is an all-pervading spiritual quality which today keynotes AA life everywhere. Moved by the spirit of anonymity, we try to give up our natural desires for personal distinction as AA members, both among fellow alcoholics and before the general public. As we lay aside these very human aspirations, we believe that each of us takes part in the weaving of a protective mantle which covers our whole society and under which we may grow and work in unity. I can grow and work in unity anonymously with all of you other anonymous alcoholics. And I can grow and work personally under the protective mantle of anonymity. I am so grateful. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Mike from Arizona, Area 3.
That's my home group. My name is Mike Glassman. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. First of all, these guys did a great job. Jim is still mumbling about that pad he left at home. Regan, I'd like to thank Regan, our delegate here. The way I heard you get picked is your delegate puts some names in from your area, then GSO picks them out, pulls them out of a hat or whatever. And so thanks, Regan, for allowing me this opportunity. But hey, Jim, at least you took the time to write a pad out. You know, you put some effort into it. You know, it looks like you studied a little bit or something. I didn't do nothing. Mary just sat here and told my story. I swear to God, I've got an ex-sponsor, my first sponsor, and my current sponsor in the room. My ex-sponsor abandoned me also, went to Japan, came back, but it was too late by then. Somebody else had me, and he's lost that privilege of sponsoring me. I am a treat. My sponsor's sleeping behind you in the striped shirt there. Could you wake him up? You know, I'm sure there's some of you in this room that drank like I did, and it sounds like Mary was one of those. I drank out in the public venue, and I enjoyed the attention that I got when I did drink. And I know there's some in this room that drank by themselves or just with one other person in a dark room with the blinds closed. Now, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you hear somebody say, I was worse than them or they were worse than me. I think those that drank by themselves in the dark room were the sickest alcoholics that we have. So if you're in here, you're the winners. You were worse than me. Because at least when I drank, I got something out of it, attention. I got attention like Mary did from the police and from the authorities and from the employers and all that stuff. I used to really enjoy getting that attention. And I got to admit, a little bit into my sobriety after I'd been sober for a while, I was seeking attention while I was sober also. And sometimes I would get that. At 5 years sober, a woman in my home group told me that I was a bleeding deacon. And I was so smart at 5 years sober, I thought that was the greatest thing you could be in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went from meeting to meeting telling people that I was a bleeding deacon. Someone suggested I read the 12 and 12 and find out what one was. I wasn't happy after that. But, yeah, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, Mary was reading a little bit about that. You know, we can think we're real important and we're big shots in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's quite a thing. I think we all go through it. At least if we stay sober long enough, we go through it. We get the opportunity to experience everything. That's how we learn, and we can help others because we've made the same mistakes. It's so much easier to help somebody else if you've already done it. These guys talked about most of the stuff, but what I didn't hear too much about is the principle of anonymity is not just to protect us, it's to protect the program. You know, I think that's really why it's there. That's why Bill kind of put it there, is because he wants to protect the program from us, because we can be some crazy people. This has been a wild weekend, and sometimes I've acted a little strange, and there's been times when groups of us have been together when I was real glad people didn't know that we were members of Alcoholics Anonymous. We were going to one service function. We were flying somewhere one time, and we were on one of those airplanes where the seats face each other. And we're on the runway. We haven't left yet, and they're getting ready to taxi, and all of a sudden the stewardess unstraps herself and comes back and says, the pilot has said you guys need to settle down and be quiet. You're bothering other passengers. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, we haven't even left yet. You don't have a clue what it's going to be like on this flight. But we still do have fun even though we don't drink. But I really do believe that principle of anonymity is to protect the program. I was reading in AA Comes of Age a little bit on the way over here that Bill talks about how he was the worst anonymity breaker in the world. You know, he said, I didn't know this, I was just reading it, and he said he'd going around the United States giving interviews, full face pictures in the newspapers, and he just thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And finally what happened, I guess, was the other AAs kind of got to thinking about this, saying, boy, he thinks he's a real big shot. And they told him, Bill, we don't want you to do that. And his response was, I'm paraphrasing now, something to the effect, this is America and we have free speech, I can do what I want. And the group conscience, though, eventually, you know, led him in the direction to stop breaking his anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. And the reason for that, I believe, is even with one of our co-founders, you know, they have to be careful. None of us are perfect, and we have to be careful about that. Something else I want to share with you before I forget is Bill said in AA Comes of Age also, if you haven't read Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, please get it. It's a fascinating book. You can learn so much from that book. It's unbelievable. But Dr. Bob, when he was real sick and he was about to die, I'm sure plenty of you know this story, but the way Bill says it, I was going to bring the book with me and I forgot it this morning so I could be correct on how I say this, but Bill says something about, I think every alcoholic should know this story. So I'm going to do the best I can to tell this little story. It's a fast story. Bob was dying. He was real sick. And he knew he didn't have long to go. So the groups from the area he was in wanted to build a mausoleum to honor him and his wife when they died. So when they laid him to rest, people would have a place to go and they could go worship at the mausoleum for one of our co-founders, you know, for the great things that they'd done, how they got us, you know, those two guys got us going and got this thing off the ground. And Bill told, Bob told Bill, and Bill kind of thought it was a good idea too, you know, because many of you know the history. Bill was quite the attention seeker. He's kind of like a lot of us. I also seek attention from time to time. But Bob says, Bill, why can't we just be buried like the rest of the folks? You know, we're nobody special. Let's just be like everybody else. And Bill goes on to say, you know, if Bob can feel that way and want to be that way, so can I. You know, so can we all. Nobody's better than nobody else in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no big shots in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I got to try to remember that. I got to try to remember that. From time to time, I remember when I'm a past delegate, and when I was first elected delegate, all of a sudden I started getting asked to speak at all these places. Like, wow, I must have a great story. You know? Well, my sponsor would go and sleep. So, water, please. He would actually go and sleep whenever I talked. But I figured that's just because he'd heard it so often. And I used to think, man, I'm a really popular guy. And I rotated out about a year and a half ago, and I haven't been asked to speak anywhere since. Now, I did make a statement. I said, I'm sick of talking. I'm sick of being asked to speak. Well, I didn't mean literally ever again. So if there's anybody in Arizona that needs me to come to a home group, let me know. My ego's getting a little down here. But from time to time, I can feel like I'm a big shot in Alcoholics Anonymous, kind of like what Mary was saying. And I got all the answers. And I got to remember that I don't. You know, I have to remember that when I do things or don't do things, I shouldn't be expecting any credit for it or looking for any credit for it. As a matter of fact, it wasn't a noble reason, but when I got this letter, you know, you have the choice of saying yes or no. I did think about saying no for about, I don't know, 10 seconds. And then I said yes, and then after you say yes, you do feel funny about it, and you want to take it back, because then you get scared and nervous. But what I did, my plan was, is not to let my sponsor know. And we're staying in the same room. Well, believe it or not, from the time I got that letter, I don't know how long ago it was, but 4 or 5 months ago? Whatever, however long, a few months. He has not known. My friends have kept it a secret. I've kept it a secret. I've made it all this way. My ultimate plan was because, you know, I'm a humble person. That was my reason for it. Was to do this little talk and then afterwards have people come up to him and say, hey, you know, Mike gave a talk down here on anonymity. He'd say, what? You know, I never know it. You know, I just sneak right by him. But it didn't work. I made it all the way till yesterday afternoon, and I was talking to somebody and it just blurted it out, and he was sitting there, so I didn't get to do it. But the reason I had planned that was a humble reason, because I just wanted to show them how humble I was and didn't want to... It had nothing to do with wanting to pull one over on him. And I know he knows that. But this has been a heck of an experience, and I was looking at some of the newspaper articles, and they've done a good job so far in the newspaper. I was looking at the picture today, and I couldn't see anybody's faces on the newspaper. Anonymity is a really important principle. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Every mind must place principles before personalities. And when I hear that statement, my mind doesn't jump right to where I think a lot of people's might, that we can't just disagree with each other, or if we're disagreeing, I sometimes hear people say principles before personalities. I think what it means is we have to put the principles of the program before ourselves. You know, we don't, like, if you're, I'm sure there's important people in this room, but I'm not one of those people that anybody cares who I am. You know, I'm not a movie star or a doctor or anything like that. And so I don't have any problem with that. But there are, sometimes there are people that actually have that issue they have to deal with. And I understand that. My sponsor was, I asked him today, since I spilled the beans a little bit on what I was doing, what the heck can I talk about today? And he says, well, why don't you talk a little bit about how we're too anonymous in Alcoholics Anonymous? And, you know, that's Bob's side. You know, Bob always felt we were too anonymous in Alcoholics Anonymous amongst each other. You know, like Jim touched a little bit on it. If I go to, well, his small town, 800 people, heck, however many people, 800 people, we might know who Jim S. is. But if you come to Phoenix, Arizona and ask for Mike or Mike G., forget it. You know, I give my last name in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I don't have a problem with that, because for that very issue. And I've actually, other people that have given their last name has been a benefit to me when I've went places, because I've used their full name and someone didn't know who that person was. So I think within the meetings, sometimes we do get a little too anonymous with each other. And we take it to the extreme sometimes, I think. But you know what? It's each individual's choice. That's what's so cool about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, where else can you go where I can disagree with everything you say and you're not going to kick me out? You know? You can't do that anywhere else. You know, I moved into an HOA, you know, house something or another, and my wife's on the board, and I disagree all the time with what they say, and I think they want to kick me out. But, you know, different organizations, they're so much different than our organization. We're so fortunate the way to where the organization we belong to. Alcoholics Anonymous has been a lifesaver to me, and the anonymity aspect of it, like I said, in my opinion, is to protect mostly the program from me, because I'm the one that can screw it up. You know, I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. My God, if I spoke for Alcoholics, if people saw me, some of the things I did sometime and knew I was in AA, they'd never come in. I've always said we're always examples, sometimes good and sometimes bad examples. You know, and I think each and every one of us are like that from time to time. I try to be a good example most of the time, but I'm a human being, and sometimes I just screw up. Sometimes I just screw up. So anyway, thanks for, again, Regan, for putting my name in. I'd like to thank the GSO staff for picking my name out of the hat. And I'd like to thank all you for sitting here for a few minutes and listening to me.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much. I'd like to share with you a couple things on anonymity for me. A couple things. When I first came in the program, I was very scared when I came in here, very ashamed, and I really just want to be here. And I remember going to one of my meetings at hometown. I didn't go into meetings in my hometown for almost a year, because I didn't want anybody to know that I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And not because I drank in my hometown, because I live in a college town where a lot of students come into the meetings to do papers. And I worked at the college, and I didn't want anybody, my anonymity broken. So I go to this meeting this one Wednesday, and because I really needed a meeting. It was dead of winter, and I was real close to my home, and it was too far. There was snow on the ground to go anywhere, and I wanted to go to meet. So I went to this meeting and I walked in and I was real safe. There's about four or five alcoholics there and I'm okay. And right before the meeting starts, in walks three students. Now, at that point, something's on my mind, probably with my husband or something, I'm hurting. And so I thought to myself, what do I do? What do I do until I sit there? So what I did, because I already have a year sober, it comes around to my turn to speak, and I say, my name is Mary, and I'm an alcoholic. And I proceed to share the topic, like I was Mary like an alcoholic. And the people in the room at the end say, thank you, Mary, for sharing. That's the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd have to break my enemy, and the students there just use the word Mary. Second occasion, much more serious. About 13 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. And I remember going to the meeting the night that I was diagnosed with cancer, really, really upset. And I knew that if I set shares in the meeting, that I knew something that serious would not stay at the meeting. It would be spread. People would share it because they wanted to share it to help me. So I decided before I went, I prayed on it, that I would share that I was having a real rough time and been like this that day with cancer. And I did that. And that group was very, very supportive. Because I shared that, and because people shared that, they had my permission to do that with other women. Women began to have mammograms that had never happened before. Women that had cancer were coming up to me, how do you get through it, Stella? What are you doing? So you have to make a decision sometimes whether you want to break an enemy or not break an enemy. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. Today I'm still cancer free, and it was over 13 years ago. That's another miracle. You talk about the grace of God. Whew, I get all excited about that. I really do. But sometimes sharing our personal experience is very, very beneficial to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're here to share our experience, strength, and hope. And I've done this a couple of times. My sponsor says, and Bill really touched on it for me, she says that let us not be too anonymous among ourselves, that we are too anonymous. You know? How's the person going to know in the rooms how to handle a situation if we don't share our experience? How's it going to know? I remember going to a hospital to visit an older gentleman in the fellowship one time. And I didn't think, I'm about 2 years sober, and I didn't think anything about it. And I go to the hospital and I ask for John E. Do you know how many John E's were in that hospital? So I get on the phone, I call my sponsor, and I'm laughing. And she says to me, you never thought to ask the last thing. Are we too anonymous among ourselves? That's something we have to really be careful of. I want to thank our three speakers. I want to thank Janesh from Area 1. And Mary S. from Area 53. And of course, Mike G. from Area 3. And those of us who would like to join us, let's close this ready prayer, please.